17. Brewster & Sons Warehouse and The Temple, City of Zion, and the Northern High Road, the Temple Lands. The travel arrangements were going to be unique. The man who was currently Abraham Jevons, and he was beginning to think he really needed a program listing the team's entire roster to help him keep his identity straight on a moment-to-moment basis, had wondered exactly how Angelic intended to transport a couple of dozen people, all of them fugitives from the Inquisition, out of what amounted to the Church of God Awaiting's capital city, in the middle of winter, without seeing every one of them spotted, stopped, and arrested. In fact, however, he'd discovered she didn't intend to transport a couple of dozen people at all. She meant to move twice that many of them. A bit more than that, actually. In fact, the exact total was 57. He'd gawked at her when she first informed him of that minor point. Yet it had quickly become evident that he'd, yet again, underestimated the sheer scope of her operations. And this time around, he decided, he'd had even less of an excuse. It had been clear from the moment he first arrived in Zion that Angelic was planning on leaving the city herself, not just smuggling out the families of a few highly placed churchmen. That being the case, it should have been equally evident to him that her plans would include the escape of any members of her own organization who might have been exposed or to whom her own disappearance might have led the Inquisition as well. He supposed that one reason it hadn't occurred to him was the sheer scale of the thing. It must have required a massive dose of what had once been called chutzpah to even contemplate an evacuation, especially in a single effort, on the scale of the one Angelic had in mind. "You're joking," he said now, quietly, standing beside her in the icy, echoing emptiness of the warehouse. Angelic had abandoned the expensive, beautifully tailored, exquisitely fashionable garments she'd worn for so many years. She'd also abandoned her long, elaborately coiffured hair, the elegant cosmetics, the jewelry, the flawlessly manicured hands. The smallish woman standing beside Jevons, her breath steaming gently in the warehouse's cold, wore quilted trousers, sensible suede boots, and a thick but utilitarian and deplorably drab woolen sweater. She was slender, true, yet she radiated a sort of compact solidness, sadly at odds with the fashionably languid, slightly fluttery, somehow ethereal Angelic. At the moment, she also wore an unbuttoned coat that looked remarkably like one of the Imperial Carisian Navy's winter weather watch coats. The thing had to weigh as much as Merlin Athrawus's cuirass, but it was undoubtedly impervious to anything as minor as a sub-zero blizzard. "Joking?" Angelic looked up at him and used one hand to smooth her now short-cropped hair. "Why should you think that, Abraham? You're telling me you actually managed to arrange all of this?" Jevons waved his hands around the warehouse. "Right under Clinton's nose?" "No, not really." Angelic gazed around the warehouse herself. Like many such buildings in Zion, the solidly built structure had been packed to the rafters at the beginning of winter, mostly with bulk foodstuffs, in this warehouse's case, although at least a quarter of its floor space had been given over to bagged glacier heart coal, while well over half of the storage yard outside it had been covered in huge piles of the gleaming black stuff from the Mountain of Light's deep mines. This late in the season, over two-thirds of the warehouse's contents had been disposed of, undoubtedly at a tidy profit, and its staff had been reduced accordingly. "As a matter of fact," she continued, returning her attention to her guest, "I made most of these arrangements well before Clinton was ever confirmed as Grand Inquisitor." She grimaced, her expressive eyes going bleak and far colder than the warehouse's interior, at the mention of that name. "I've always believed in planning ahead, Abraham. Even in the days when I was foolish enough to believe not even the vicarate could be so corrupt, so stupid, as to name someone like Clinton Inquisitor. Now... She shrugged quickly, angrily, and Jevons nodded. In the wake of her own disappearance, Angelic's information net had been largely shut down, but they scarcely needed it to confirm that her worst estimates of Clinton's intentions had been horrifyingly accurate. Not a single member of Samuel Wilson's circle in the temple or here in Zion had escaped. The handful of lower-ranked bishops and archbishops who'd managed to get out of the city before winter might still have some faint chance of evading the Inquisitors, but no one else, aside from the family members Angelic had gotten to in time, had pulled it off. It had taken 3 days to confirm Samuel and Howard Wilson's deaths, and Angelic had withdrawn to the tiny cubbyhole here in the warehouse which had replaced her luxurious townhouse. She'd closed the door very quietly behind her, and only a Pika's exquisite hearing could have detected the soft, stifled, disciplined, infinitely bitter, broken-hearted sobs which had been her companions in that dark little room. When she'd re-emerged an hour later, her eyes might have been the tiniest bit swollen, but if they were, that was the only sign of her bottomless grief. Nor were the Wilsons the only people she had to mourn. They were the only members of the circle who had truly known about Angelic's activities, but many of the others had known Madame Angelic, and many of those others had grown to be close personal friends over the years. Very few of them had held Angelic's profession against her, and most of them had learned, gradually, of her charitable activities and, especially, her contributions to the winter soup kitchens and shelters. If Samuel and Howard were lost to her forever, at least they were already dead. Her other friends, less fortunate, were in Clinton's power, and she had no illusions about what was happening to them at this very moment.